You're listening to SBS News.
Minister, thanks for joining us today. Can you tell me how you're feeling? You've been elevated into the Cabinet as the new Minister for Indigenous Australians. Mm-hmm. How are you feeling?
Oh, deeply proud, JP. Deeply proud to be a voice for the people of the Northern Territory at the big table, the Cabinet table. Deeply proud to be a voice for my own families, the Yanyuwa, Garrwa, Mardja and Gurindji peoples of the Gulf region, and incredibly thankful to have been able to get here and be offered this opportunity by walking with incredibly amazing people like Linda Burney, Senator Pat Dodson, and continuing to walk with people like Marion Scrimgeour and so many leaders from across the country.
Yeah. You mentioned there Linda Burney. Of course, she was Minister for Indigenous Australians for a number of years. What type of legacy does she leave?
Linda leaves an extraordinary legacy, one of persistence, of determination, of compassion and kindness, someone who never gave up, despite her own personal trials and tribulations over many decades, always believed in what was possible, strived for that, fought for that, won, sometimes lost, but always kept going. Mm.
The Ministry or the Ministry for Indigenous Australians or for Aboriginal Affairs used to be described as the poison chalice. Like, it was often seen as such a hard portfolio where you never got any wins. Do you see it as that?
In Yolngu, they use the word gapu for water. I see that as important in this role of First Nations people, in leading the decisions around it. A thirst for life, a thirst for what's right, for truth. So I see it as an incredible honour and privilege.
You've previously spoken about the need for bipartisanship across the portfolio. How will you actually achieve that beyond just calling for bipartisan
sure.
support?
There's a lot of work ahead, JP. There's no two ways about it. But I'm a firm believer in trying to work with people. I've grown up with that as a Yolngu woman in terms of the Yanyuwa, Garrwa, Mardja and Gurindji peoples. We have four clans. I've always had to navigate and negotiate between those clan groups, you know, between the Jungais and the Nyimringi, and always trying to find a common ground between these groups. And I've used that same skill, if you like, in walking across the Northern Territory with over 100 Aboriginal languages. I don't speak those languages, so I naturally use interpreters, as you should, you know, to listen, to think, to work a way through, to still find common ground. And even in political life, more so in political life, we need to find the one thing that we do have common ground in, and that's the challenge for me, is to look for that in my opponents. Because I do want to see us rise above treating Indigenous affairs as a political football when there are so many of our people committing suicide, when there are so many of our people incarcerated and needing the kind of support from their leadership.
But it's got to be a huge challenge, given what we saw in the referendum with opposition to the referendum, to the yes vote. Mm. And, you know, the Garma Festival this weekend, Peter Dutton has chosen not to attend. The shadow spokesperson has chosen not to attend. This is a great opportunity to show, beyond the referendum result, that there is bipartisan support, or we're working towards that support. What type of message does that send if the Leader of Opposition can't even attend an invitation on behalf of the Yothiyindi Foundation and traditional owners to come to this festival?
Well, clearly they're questions for the opposition leader and the shadow Indigenous Affairs Minister. From my perspective, I feel that in the parliamentary realm, I need to do as much as I can to reach out. And not just to the coalition, there's also the Greens, there's also the crossbenchers, there's also the Teals. You know, democracy's an important tool of ours where we need to be able to pull in as many representatives from all political persuasions and see where you land on these issues.
Do you think, though, it's again a missed opportunity for the Leader of Opposition not to attend Garma, given that he didn't come last year in the referendum year, has previously said that it's a yes love-in and it's for elites and corporates, that it's another missed opportunity to maybe progress that bipartisanship in Indigenous affairs?
Well, I clearly understand that the Yolngu are disappointed that the opposition leader and the shadow Indigenous Affairs Minister did not take up their invitation. I'm hoping that perhaps there will be ways forward in the future for them to be able to show the respect that no doubt the Yolngu have provided in that invitation. What I'm about though, JP, is that these issues around closing the gap and these targets, which we are fundamentally finding very difficult to lower, are so important to me, and I will do everything I can to ensure that we can have some kind of bipartisanship around trying to reduce those high rates of suicide, improving lives for our babies, our young kids at schools. So that's really where I'm going to focus on.
Yeah. Let's talk about the closing the gap, of course. Devastating analysis by the Productivity Commission on those targets, failing to meet those targets by 2030, over 2030. What are your key priorities in readdressing those targets to maybe shift them to somewhere that we actually are meeting those targets?
Well, I have to have a look at how the Coalition of Peaks is working on this with governments across the country, with our government federally, speaking with Pat Turner, the chair of that. I'm looking forward to meeting with her to go through it in more detail. We have to do this together with First Nations organisations. One of the things our government is absolutely committed on is making sure we are walking with First Nations organisations and people in the decision-making process. But somewhere in that decision-making process, we still don't seem to be able to achieve the better outcomes in those targets. And I need to have a good look at that and find out, well, where is the blockage here?
The opposition, during the referendum campaign and subsequent, are saying that we need an audit. We need an audit on Indigenous expenditure. We need an audit into the programs. Is that something that you support, or do you see that as a way forward in addressing those targets?
This has come up quite a number of times throughout the many different Senate estimates that we do have in the parliamentary system. Senate estimates is about accountability and transparency. Many of those organisations which are called on by the opposition to have audits into actually appear before the Senate estimates, and they do give evidence very publicly, very transparently to the senators at that table. So that is a clear accountability, certainly one tool that's already used. In terms of calling for audits, there's also the National Audit Office that does its own audits into organisations across the country, and that is again part of the parliamentary process and part of the tools in looking at these organisations. So it already exists.
Are you worried though that that sort of call for an audit and call for a look at Indigenous expenditure, and this word of, you know, this catchphrase of $49 billion being spent on Indigenous people across Australia, that that gains traction and people say, well, we spend too much on Indigenous communities. If they just spent the money more wisely, they would actually close the gap. Mm. And in some ways, it's almost misinformation that we saw through the referendum campaign. Mm. Are you worried that that gets traction as we head up to a federal election?
Well, we saw through the referendum how easily it is to provide misinformation in the broader community and how that does stick. So, of course, we have to learn from that whole experience and see how misinformation can be fed like wildfire in ways that can be quite damaging. So, moving forward, though, what we have to also point out is that, and this is what I have already done, is as leaders, politically, whatever side of politics you're on, we also have to be very careful of the language that we use in defining things. Let's be careful that it does impact ordinary Australians. You know, we have to be careful of people's mental health and well-being in the way we communicate at a federal level, because it can have detrimental effects at a family level. So I do think we have to be careful in the language we use. And when we use language that says, oh, there's too much money going to Aboriginal organisations, again, look at them, they're hopeless, they're unable to work on it. Well, what were the reasons behind the problems there, you know? Was it that there was a lot of sorry business going on? Was it the fact that many of those workers were living in overcrowded homes? Or half of them are so unwell, they're suffering from chronic kidney disease or any other form of health issues? Maybe the children have FASD. Like, let's have some compassion here and really look at what the issues are instead of branding it with one big brush and saying that blackfellas are absolutely hopeless, which is not the case.
Minister, I want to talk now about the relationship between Aboriginal communities and the various police departments. We saw in the inquiry into Kumanjai Walker racist attitudes of the NT police. We've seen similar incidents in WA, in New South Wales and Queensland. Is there a role here that the federal government can play in repairing those relationships?
I have yet to get across the country to talk specifically on those issues, but I can say from my experience here in the Northern Territory that I've spoken with the Northern Territory Police Commissioner about the issues that have been raised here in terms of accusations of racism in the police force, the concerns about the treatment of First Nations people by the police, and I have had thorough conversations with the police commissioner here. He is moving and very aware to improve the circumstances between police and First Nations people by wanting to employ more First Nations people in the police force. He has a senior staffer now in Leanne Little, who's had experience in the South Australian police force but also in the legal fraternity across the Northern Territory, and was a former Northern Territory Australian of the Year, and she's an outstanding person for him to have in the police area to give guidance as to how better improve the relationship. It's still a way to go, but I do think that each jurisdiction certainly is it's an area that I'll be looking at very closely as I travel.
Let's look forward. 100 days. What do you hope to have achieved in your first 100 days as Minister for Indigenous Australians?
Well, I certainly hope in the first 100 days that I've been able to reach across the aisles, political aisles, and actually really have serious discussions with my opponents, with the Teals, with the crossbenchers, about how it is we can elevate Indigenous affairs above the political football that it's always been.
Now, of course, you were a former newsreader with NITV. Do you think that there is a path there for NITV talent to move across into politics? And if so, how do we do that?
You know what I
Not
say?
Not asking for anyone
you know
in particular.
What I say? You know what I say to people? I say, look, what I love about this country is that we are a democracy. And if you are interested, if you want to improve some area of life that you have or the people around you, then put your hand up. Whether it's local government, whether it's state or territory politics or federal politics, have a go.
Yeah.
Just have a go.
And you can't be what you can't see, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Minister, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.